Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today we have for you a brand new episode just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on December 29th of 2024 under the headline "Deadly Forgotten Tornado Was the Worst in the State History." Here we go. Happy New Year! At the time of this writing, it's just a few days before Anno Domini 2025 is scheduled to inflict itself upon us, and this time of year, many writers make a regular practice of looking back upon the past year and writing about it. I suspect this practice got started with penny press era news hounds who found it very hard to track down sources during the week after Christmas, or maybe they just wanted to relax and bang out an easy story so that they could get back to wassailing or speakeasy hopping or whatever they did back then to celebrate the season. In that spirit of the season, I also am going to look back on something I wrote, but not something from the past year, or even the past decade. Fairly early in my practice as a regular writer about Oregon history, in early 2012, I started a story off with a statement that, although technically true, well, let's just say it showcased my meteorological ignorance more than I like to admit. Oregon is not known as a place in which you have to worry about hurricanes of any size, I wrote, nor do we get those high plains storms with hailstones the size of golf balls, or tornadoes that vacuum up houses full of Dorothy and Toto, or dust storms that you can't see your house through. In my defense, though, it is true that people in Oregon don't expect tornadoes, or hurricanes, or hailstones the size of frozen Cornish game hens plummeting out of the sky. Certainly David and Sarah Parrish didn't when they moved to the central Oregon town of Long Creek back in the spring of 1894. They were leaving their old home in Kansas, they told their neighbors, to get away from the cyclones, meaning, of course, tornadoes. Less than 4 months later, David and Sarah's new Oregon home was demolished and both of them were killed by a tornado. The town of Long Creek developed in the late 1870s and early 1880s on the banks of Long Creek, one of the tributaries of the John Day River. It was and is a little north of the center of Grant County, a few dozen miles north-northwest of John Day and Canyon City. It was a prosperous little town, well-positioned, and it grew relatively quickly to become one of the most promising settlements in Grant County, so much so that in 1891 the residents incorporated the town and started the process of trying to take over from then-fading Canyon City as county seat. But before anything could come of that, the town got flattened by the most intense cyclone in recorded Oregon history. And yeah, about that cyclone, one of the people who watched it descend upon the town gave what may actually be the earliest known eyewitness description of the creation of a bomb cyclone. The term bomb cyclone may be familiar to you since it was just last month, again at the time of this writing, that Oregonians were treated to some very breathless weather reports about one that was expected to hit the state and indeed the entire West Coast. Bomb cyclone is a super dramatic name for what happens when, during a storm, a mass of cold Arctic air gets sucked into a storm's vortex together with a mass of much warmer air, and when that happens, something called bombogenesis happens. I know bombogenesis sounds like a made-up word for something Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor got up to in the kitchenette of their motel room while on the run from the Terminator, but this is strictly a weather term, and the reference is metaphorical rather than literal. The intensity of the storm, as it were, explodes, and a bomb cyclone is the result. In our most recent example, the bomb reference was a bit of a bust. November's storm, November of 2024, that is, was not nearly as apocalyptic as the name suggested, in most of Oregon at least. Nor was it as destructive as meteorologists feared it would get. Basically, it manifested itself as a very large and powerful but otherwise ordinary windstorm. It knocked out power to 500,000 people along the West Coast. It did a fair amount of property damage, killed 2 people by blowing trees down on them, and dumped huge amounts of rain across Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia. But For all that, it was basically just a really big five-state-wide version of a type of storm we're all super familiar with. The bomb cyclone that hit Long Creek, though, was a bomb cyclone worthy of the name. It was tiny by comparison. It probably didn't even leave Grant County. But what it lacked in size, it more than made up for in intensity. Writing in his July 8, 1894 edition, Long Creek Eagle editor and town mayor Orrin Patterson described its inception. "With a roar and a rumble which was no less than the effect of a severe windstorm in the forest surrounding Fox Valley," he writes, "two angry-looking clouds met at the summit of the mountain 3 miles south of Long Creek, and the work of destruction began in all its fury, taking its course almost due north." Patterson would have had no way of knowing that one of the two clouds he saw was warm and the other cold, but what happened next makes it pretty clear that such was the case. The combined clouds swirled together savagely, dropped a funnel cloud to the ground, and started racing down the mountain toward town, gouging a half-mile-wide trail of destruction through the thick virgin timber forest that would be visible as a scar on the mountainside for at least half a century afterward. In minutes, it reached the town of Long Creek. "Dwellings, barns, and store buildings were lifted into the air as if but the weight of a feather, and torn to atoms, portions of which were carried for miles distant," Patterson writes. "For a moment, the air was a thickened mass of missiles flying in every direction." At the same time, the cloud above was releasing hail, and if someone had been able to preserve some of it, it probably would have set a national record for size. But it was also very unusual stuff, according to S.M. Blandford, the officer in charge of the U.S. Weather Bureau in Portland, who reported his correspondent told him, "The formation was more in the nature of sheets of ice than simple hailstones. The sheets of ice averaged 3 to 4 inches square and from 3/4 to 1 1/2 inches in thickness. They had a smooth surface and in falling gave the impression of a vast field or sheet of ice suspended in the atmosphere, suddenly broken into fragments about the size of the palm of the hand." Some of the residents managed to get out of the way of the fast-approaching funnel cloud, but three of the houses it hit and demolished were occupied. One of them was the home of David and Sarah Parrish, the refugee couple that I mentioned at the top, who had fled Kansas to get away from tornadoes, and both of whom died at the whim of this one. Another was the Nichols residence, home of Dr. and Mrs. Nichols. Both were badly injured, and their infant daughter Blanche was killed. The Parrishes and little Blanche were the only fatalities from the storm. Six others were injured, some very badly. One lucky storm watcher, I.W. Splawn, was snatched up off the ground and carried high into the air over the top of a store before being dashed to the ground, but he landed in a haystack and was completely uninjured. The storm also picked up a piano, probably from Dr. Nichols' house, and hurled it several hundred yards. All told, the storm inflicted about $30,000 in damage, which is equivalent to about $1.1 million in modern currency, upon the community, leaving some residents with literally nothing left to their names. "Those houses that had escaped being destroyed were thrown open to the wounded with medical assistance summoned," Patterson writes, "while dead bodies were taken to City Hall and prepared for interment. With all its fury, the cyclone swept everything in its course, and of over 24 structures destroyed, there is not enough left to erect a decent dwelling," he adds. In the aftermath, Long Creek struggled to get back on its feet. An appeal for humanitarian assistance was sent out to nearby cities and towns to contribute to a relief fund, but this does not seem to have done much for them. The timing was terrible. In late May of 1894, the Willamette River had flooded the streets of downtown Portland, and at the time the cyclone hit, the floodwaters had just receded just a day or two before. So Portland had a lot of cleaning up to do and damage to fix, and plenty of other towns situated close to the banks of the Columbia and Willamette Rivers also took heavy damage from floodwaters. And as if that weren't enough, the Panic of 1893, which was actually a full-blown depression, was in full swing. There just wasn't much relief money available, and there were lots of other disasters competing for what there was. So Long Creek pretty much had to do its best with what it had. They managed, but after that day, there wasn't any further talk of taking over as county seat. Today, Long Creek is a nice little community well off the beaten track, home to somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 people. The weather in the summer is about as close to perfect as it gets. The average highs in the hottest months, July and August, top out at 84 degrees, and winters are not bad either. It's easy to see why people loved it back in 1894. and didn't expect that balmy, mellow weather to suddenly turn as deadly as it did. Key sources in this story included works by Reba Carter-Smith, Louetta Zumwalt-Shaw, William F. Willingham, and the archives of the Ashland Semi-Weekly Tidings, Dell's Daily Chronicle, and Heppner Gazette from June 1894. Well, that is our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I sure hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. If you enjoy the Offbeat Oregon History podcast, I bet you'd also be interested in Underground History, which is a history and archaeology podcast hosted by Chelsea Rose of Jefferson Public Radio out of Ashland. Dr. Chelsea is actually an anthropologist at Southern Oregon University, and her podcast is a collaboration with the university's anthropology department. It comes out roughly once a month, sometimes twice. I've actually been interviewed on it, by the way. If you're into this stuff, it's well worth checking out. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m. So it won't be long before the next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up. And until it is, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.